Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Housewives Archives, a podcast where we discuss in great detail all things Real Housewives. My name's Ellie Nunn, and for the second time this week, you're supposed to be my friend!
Oh, my God.
My friend! My sister, my soulmate! It's my co-host, my ever-patient co-host, Mr. James Evans!
Yay!
So, James and I can barely look at each other.
At the best of times.
It's been noticeable radio silence this week. A few days ago, on a cool summer evening, James and I sat down and recorded what I would argue was one of our finest episodes.
Some of our best work.
Some
we laughed,
of our best
we cried.
Work. The impressions were on point. I had just come back from a hugely eventful trip, so we were slapping our thighs, laughing about that. And I think
just a couple of
pretty self-satisfied at the end. Exactly. A couple of besties patting themselves on the back and going, that's how you do it.
I was like, by God, we've done it again.
That's how you make a goddamn podcast.
I think we finally become a slick professional production and we can play with the big boys.
So I sent off my little voice recording to James and went on with my day. And 5 minutes later, I got a message from James, just in all capitals, just saying, Ellie, listen to your recording. And I did. And what I heard was the sweet, sweet sound of silence.
It was nada.
As Simon and Garfunkel said, it was the sound of silence.
So I put in all the audio and I edit everything so I could see mine and mine, you know, it has the wavelength and everything.
I hear Ellie's you're a little passive aggressive.
No, I'm just saying, I just want to give you a visual idea of what it looked like to me. Before I even press play, I was like, Ellie's is just a line.
She's dead.
Beep. And I ended up doing very much a Vicky Gumbelson impression where I sort of just like shook my head and was like, no.
You were like, I'm the Lord Jesus, be nailed on the cross. Like, what punishment
did I
deserve this for? We're laughing now.
We can laugh now. We can but laugh.
But it was definitely, there was a real tension in the air. And a real sense. I thought I was going to cry. I think partly because we'd expended a lot of emotional energy on it. Because when I tell you guys, it wasn't just a good ep, it wasn't just a funny ep, it got deep, it felt like a really good therapy session. The idea of having to do it again was just too much to process in that moment. Especially of all people, to have to do the one on Vicky again.
Exactly.
To have to do the Vicky impressions again.
You have to commit to Vicky. You know, you can't half-ass a Vicky episode.
Exactly.
I had to have a lie down. I got down on the floor in the fetal position and just lay there. And then next thing I knew, it's dark outside and here we are.
But you know what, James? I'm feeling good. I'm in a really good mood today.
I've like got it out of my system and I'm ready to Mamma Mia, here we go again.
Now, obviously, James, you've heard all of the events of the last few weeks.
Yes.
But I think it's unfair to withhold that information from my older brother, who's probably intently listening, being like, but what happened to Ellie in Budapest? what has she been up to? This is my only source of information.
Can you hear the loud din of the people? They want to know.
Yes.
How was Budapest?
Going, Budapest. Budapest.
Well, we can't keep him waiting any longer.
No, we can't. Okay, I'll keep it as short and snappy without skimming over any of the juicy deets. Went to Budapest, was asked repeatedly whether I was in Buda or Pest. After about a week, was able to finally confirm I was in Buda.
Hey? There's two parts to it.
Yes.
I had no idea. The more you know.
An education, James.
Thank you.
An education. So I was there and had this like slightly strange experience that when we flew over, by the way, we flew on an airline that I swear to God is made up. Even the air hostesses and hosts looked like,
shifty.
They looked like actors on The Truman Show. You know all those moments in The Truman Show where the guy's like, I'm an actor. I don't know how to like drive a bus.
Drive the bus, yeah.
They literally looked as they're about to take off. Like, what are we, like, do we, like, this has gone too far.
I love this idea that you are in The Truman Show. You've never gone abroad before. This is the closest you've gotten to it.
I like to think it's the opposite, that I am in The Truman Show, but it's so international. They've covered LA. Yes, they've covered New York. Yeah. Like, they've got those
massive
routes covered.
Budget. They didn't think about Budapest.
Budapest. They were suddenly like, fuck.
We had Pest, but we don't have Buda down. Fuck.
So they were like, quick, get her on Wizz Airlines. And then I got an email from the director that was like, you know, wishing you safe travels. Hopefully see you at some point this week. And I was like, eh?
In the Twilight Zone.
Dun, dun. And the whole cast, I think, was a bit like, you what? What do you mean some point? And we basically got there and they had, I mean, talk about splashing the cash. They got us all out there, but with like nothing to do. It was a pre-production week. Now, in fairness, I actually had more to do than a lot of people. I'm not patting myself on the back. Mm.
You carried the show on your back.
I lugged it. Lugged it through the streets of Buda. Right. I had quite extensive costume and hair stuff because I was playing fancy pants. And to be clear, it was all like period and a lot, I'm just like, crapping all over my NDA.
Don't worry, it's not going to go far. No one's
exactly
listening.
I'm like, it's literally just Josh. And then I had like a 4.5 hour intimacy rehearsal. Would not recommend.
Oh,
I mean, would recommend, like, would definitely recommend intimacy coordinator.
Intimacy coordinator stress me out more than just winging it, but that's just me.
Okay, this was a huge
that's
debate
just me.
On set, and not to get too sidetracked, but people kept saying, oh, I feel like it's actually making it more awkward. And I had a big think about it. And I was like, without doubt, it makes it more awkward than, like you say, just sort of shutting down that bit of your brain and just kind of getting on with it. But I do think that's probably exactly the point. And for as awkward as it was, I thought, I suppose it's better for it to be like unbelievably awkward than to later, if you kind of
ultimately,
reopen
yeah.
that bit of your brain, be like, that was really uncomfortable or that wasn't handled right. I think the awkwardness is probably good.
I mean, I guess for your show, you kind of needed it. I had an intimacy coordinator for The Importance of Being Earnest, and she had a traffic light system where I had to pair up with the woman playing Cecily, and we had to go through each part of our body saying where we're red, where we're green,
we had
where
to
we're
do
orange.
That.
So it's gone international.
It's reached Buddha.
So just me in The Importance of Being Earnest being like, I'm pretty green everywhere. Probably my genitals is a red, maybe an orange.
I so
depending on the day.
Spat my coffee out.
I just,
The Importance of Being Earnest.
Exactly.
The idea that Cecily would just walk in and just grab cross.
Exactly. Nothing more than a peck on the cheek, really. That's all it warrants. And I'm happy to shut the conversation down there. Anyway, back to Budapest.
To be fair, this was filming mass orgies.
You were like,
and things like that.
And
so it was quite important. Anyway, had lovely week just pottering around Budapest. And then we started filming, and this is when my Ellie Nunness really kind of kicked in full force. I was thinking, everything's been a bit chilled. Everything's been going a little bit smoothly since I got off Wizz Airlines.
Right.
So it all started with a peach, with the humble peach.
As all good stories begin.
As Roald Dahl.
Call me by your name.
Famously.
Ellie in Budapest. Yeah, I could go on.
So I ate a peach and started having an allergic reaction. Which is scary at the best of times, but...
funny, in retrospect.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. But because I have anaphylaxis, it's particularly scary for me.
Now,
and of course, being
did
me...
Did you
I,
have
I did,
your
EpiPen? I did not have Seems, my EpiPen.
Okay, yeah. Thought as much.
Of course I didn't.
Yeah.
In fact, I recently this week called the doctor to be like, can I order some EpiPens? And they were like, we have down that you haven't ordered one since 2019. And so we need you to have an appointment to like get re-prescribed for them. It's like, good, good.
For
I'm now
best.
Being refused. Yes. This is how they cleanse out the weaklings.
Bloody NHS.
I'm private. No. Still... I will not have the NHS take the fall for this. No one to blame but myself. Anyway, basically it turns out that the skin on a peach, the kind of hairy, soft, fuzzy skin of a peach, I'm allergic to that. So then I got what I thought were hives, sort of delayed hives, from eating the peach. And I got on set the next day, and I should probably say at this point that no one really spoke English on set. Everyone spoke Hungarian.
Right.
Just been a real curveball and be like, everyone was entirely
Jamaican.
Portuguese. And the third AD, who sort of spoke some English, I was showing her my arm and she was like, oh, I think those are spider bites. I was like, right.
Yeah.
Cool. She was like, yeah, you see how they're like up your arm? Like it's run up your arm? I was like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't need to paint a picture here.
I do see that. And everyone in the cast, basically over the week, they kept coming up. I kept getting them, and only on my arms, and it was only me. And everyone was trying to help, but their version of trying to help was to be like, it must be in your bed. Or someone would be like, no, no, it's in her costumes. I think it's because the costumes are really old that there must be spiders in the costumes.
I think it's burrowed under her skin and it's hatched.
Don't, because then someone kept being like, maybe it's laid eggs in your arms and that's why it keeps coming up. I was like, trying really hard to remain calm.
Oh my God.
And then on the last, oh, and then I was like in full costume about to film this orgy scene. And I get a FaceTime from my darling boyfriend standing sheepishly outside my house being like, there's been a gas leak.
Oh.
Go. But of course. Anyway, gas leak's all fine.
Please, I have an orgy to fuck my way through right
Please.
Now.
I'm just like manically scratching my spider bites through the cover-up makeup. And yes, gas leak's all fine. There was a moment where they said they might have to dig up the road outside my house, which was quite stressful.
There was a body under there. It's technically on my property, so now I'm under investigation. It's a whole thing.
I saw a really funny video yesterday of a guy in court having read out to him all of his internet searches. Have you seen this?
Oh, God. No.
Where it's like at 4:50. It's just all on him. No reaction. Yeah. It's like, at 4:55 a.m., you Googled how to hide a body in an emergency. At 5 a.m., you Googled how to quickly dispose of a body. At 5:50 a.m., you Googled what to do when you need to get rid of a body. Be like, at 6:05 a.m., you put, what if you murdered someone and needed to...
No.
And it just goes on, and it made me laugh so much.
Oh my God.
So yes, long story short, on the last day, I got a giant spider bite. Like this one was not playing around. This made the other ones look like midge bites.
Right.
Like you could see the prop, like the fang marks, and it had gone all swollen. And it was my last day of filming and they got the medic on set and she comes in and she looks at my arm and she says something in Hungarian. And no one was really ever like translating to me. So I was getting a bit stressed and I said to the third AD, what does she say? And she was like, she says, fuck. And I was like, no, what does she actually say? And she was like, no, she actually just says, fuck.
Okay, that's what you want to hear.
I was like, great.
It's the medical opinion. Cool.
But even then, they were like, well, she wants to give you a really strong antihistamine, but it will send you to sleep and we need you to film. And so, yeah, they just didn't give it to me. So it was quite stressful.
Is it like a thing in Hungary that they are known for particularly aggressive spiders or something?
Well, they were really like, oh, yeah, that's a spider bite.
Like, yeah, I don't think it would occur to me if I saw someone with like a big red patch to be like, oh, that's a spider bite.
But also the third AD, when she first said to me, I think that's a spider bite, she then was showing me her arm, which had little scars on it, where she was like, yeah, spider bites.
What?
A bit like, okay, so this is like...
You're going to get a scar from it?
I mean, I hope not. I haven't even looked. This is when I hold it up and it's just rotting flesh. Got infected.
It's gangrenous, but no scar yet. Fingers crossed.
So, yes, that was my very strange bitey experience. And you know what? If they come at me for talking about the show on the podcast, then I'll sue them for the old spider bites.
Yeah, this seems like a bit of an infringement of your workers' rights in a plethora of ways. I think you got a solid case right there.
Did I tell you this last time about how I just got a message from... What? About how they like specifically wrote to us saying don't share anything on social media. And I just put up a whole carousel of pictures.
Basically, yeah, like a lovely slideshow. I felt like I was there with you.
I was like, what you gonna do?
Yeah. Well, it's done.
I'm sorry, I just don't believe anyone is waiting with bated breath for said program. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we'll all win BAFTAs.
Hey.
But best orgy.
The best goddamn orgy that Sky History's ever seen. Oh, fuck. Am I not meant to say what channel it's on? Anyway, let's move on.
Oh, my God, James.
No. What have I done? All right. Let's talk about...
So how have you been?
I've been fine. No, thank you for asking. I was away. I was in Cincinnati. I did a show. Had a lovely time. Great part of the world.
Great part of Cincinnati.
Is that your Marge?
That was Marge, yes.
That was a very good Marge. Well done. Yeah, and then I got back yesterday and I'm ready to hit the ground running with all my Vicky talk. Whoop.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Ready to whoop it up.
I am ready to whoop it up. I am. I'm excited.
Me too.
Mentally, I'm in Andalays right now.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to start?
I think we should go a bit old school and just check in with the voice. Vicky Gunvalson's many voices.
We need to warm up, don't we?
Because I feel much like Erica Jane, it's hard to pin down a Vicky voice because there's a lot of moving parts to it and they kind of ebb and flow depending on her mood.
Yes, you're so right.
I think as a base, she has a bit of a strong Midwestern twang that comes out. So if you're listening for it, instead of not, she'll be like, nah. And instead of happy, she'll be like, happy. So that comes out a lot. She's just yes. a girl from the Midwest when all said and done. And then she does this very, I used the phrase when we recorded last time, honeyed baby voice. And Ellie quite likes it. So I'm going to resurrect it.
I loved
now.
It.
She has this very honeyed baby voice that she puts on if she's trying to project some sort of emotion or vulnerability. You know, I just want my friends back. I want my friends back.
Will you forgive me?
Yeah, very much on a beach crying voice. Or if she's trying to get a man. Sort of voice.
I actually can't do that Vicky voice. I find it really hard. I can do a bit of when we were talking about with men, her sort of I don't know, what do you want to but the actual voice is right on the break in a way that my voice just doesn't.
Yeah.
Do Vicky's voice is exhausting to impersonate because there's so much air in it as well.
Mm-hmm. On the subject of air, we then get this bubbled voice Vicky. It's often when she's angry or if she's very excited. So I did it a couple of episodes ago with that, like, I know, and I have an opinion about it, Eddie.
I have not been able to get that out of my head. And I literally, because I didn't even know what the words of the sentence were, but I was on the tube yesterday, just under my breath going, Eddie.
She's in a state of bubble voice for that whole reunion. Eddie. Every line to Bronwyn is like, turn it down, Bronwyn. I know, you had strippers.
It's very in that, goodbye, Kyle.
Yeah, very, goodbye, Kyle. And then, of course, we have the Vicky Demon voice as well. And I think this is where you are going to really have one over me because my voice plays to the strengths of the low husk of Luanda Lizeps, but I can't get to
that kind of
squealing piglet
shrieky
height that Vicky gets.
It comes at a price, I tell you that. Mm. Even the one from the intro, which I can only ever do if I do Tamra going into it, when she goes, stop letting him tell you what to think. And he goes, he doesn't tell me what to think!
It's very good. Season 7's a good season for her demon voice, because that's also with the 80s Bunko Party, where, you know, she's arguing.
But she doesn't really have like a, but it's not very quotable, the 80s Bunko Party, but I do think that, I think it's the first episode of Orange County I ever saw, potentially.
Wow.
Yeah, I came in at a really weird time. I've since gone back.
How did you not have a heart attack? That's too much Vicky in one
well,
go.
I was just like, holy crap, who right. is this person?
You're right. There's not like a memorable line. And I had pause thinking about what it was and I looked it up. And the line itself is, you're not a mother. You have no idea what it's like. But I think what's striking about that instance is that it's very squealy. I think it's the most demonic her voice ever gets. But what's funny about it is that she alternates between her demon voice, but she's also trying to leave the party. So she's sort of like going around the room being like kissing people on the cheek and saying bye in like a normal voice. So it's literally like, you're not a baby, you have no idea what it's like! Bye, sweetie. Oh, bye. I'll see you soon. This is disgusting! Shame on you! Bye, I'll call you. Okay.
My boyfriend is getting your business!
Yes. See ya. Bye. The contrast is so severe and sudden.
Oh God, that's so funny.
Oh my God. I've peaked too soon now. I'm wiped out. I can't do the rest of the episode.
That was so good. Why don't you take us back? Speaking of where I came into Housewives, I feel like you are much more articulate on old school Vicky. Like the Vicky who is the OG of Orange County and who really, in many ways, started off this whole thing and was one of the first people to bring the kind of character that stopped the show just being aspirational and made it funny.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Intentionally or not.
As always, you explained it so succinctly and precisely, and I'm just going to waffle and basically restate your point with as many words as possible. So yeah, if you haven't seen the early seasons of Orange County, it's very much an acquired taste. They are slow and they're quite dull and they're very sincere, and it's the closest that we get to a legitimate docudrama about life behind the gates of Coto de Casa. And it tends to follow each woman as an individual, and most of her interactions are with her family as opposed to the social dynamics of the group of women. And so as a result, there's very little in the way of conflict. That all seems to change when Vicky is on camera, because there seems to be this hilarious thread throughout the entirety of Vicky's life where she has this Valerie Cherish-ness to her, where Vicky so clearly goes into scenes thinking she's going to look like this incredible, fun mum, but she's a working mum and she can do it all and she's whooping it up and loving life. But what she actually becomes is just this shrieking monster who's a nightmare to be around. And there's probably three famous instances that we can dissect, and I'll just look at them very quickly. The first one happens, it is that family van scene, and it's probably the best, where we all know it. She's planning on going on a cruise with Don and the kids are each bringing some friends, and this tiny little van turns up, and Vicky's expecting this limousine. And it is incredibly tame by today's standards, but we do have like a glimmer of demon Vicky that comes out. So it's just this glorious scene of her on her front porch in this like white 2006 ensemble, and she's holding her little BlackBerry, and she's like, "This is Vicky Gunvalson. I am not happy. Why would you send a little family van to pick up six people? This is not funny. You have a little family van. You guys are everywhere. Why are you sending a family van?"
But you're so right that it seems tame, but what's amazing, I think, is that it's like authentic and organic and who she is, where now she's capitalized on that and she cracks it out whenever or whatever. But that really is just like, it's what's so amazing about something like Orange County versus Salt Lake City or one of the newer shows that are such hybrids. They're such creations that have studied the original forms, mm-hmm. where people like Vicky or Teresa in the first couple of seasons or whatever, there's something extraordinary about the fact that they aren't necessarily playing up to a show because the show isn't supposed to be drama yet.
Yeah.
Maybe less Teresa and more. Oh, no, because Teresa had the table flip and things like that.
Right.
But yeah.
It felt in general, and I honestly don't know either way how filming works anymore, but inevitably, as the shows have developed over the years, they have a much slicker production value and it feels a lot more organized, and the women just get their call sheets and they're kind of treated like actors and they turn up at these set locations to have a set conversation. Here, it feels like they're really roughing it, and it is just guerrilla footage on their driveway at 8 a.m.
Sounds like my time in Budapest. And they're all covered in spider bites.
Having an orgy. Yeah. The scene really takes a turn after that. That's what they don't show you. But you just feel like it's meant to be B-roll footage and they're never meant to use it. Like they weren't expecting this kind of performance from Vicky. And then there's this great cartoonish bit that she does, which never really makes the cut, where afterwards she's like laughing and crossing herself as she tends to do. And she's like, "I was expecting relaxing in a limo with a mimosa." And it just summarizes what's so dramatic and comedic about Vicky, this contrast between her expectation versus reality. And even though I said it's pretty tame, what it does is it is a glimpse into the monster that Vicky becomes. And it's funny because then when we cut to the end of her time on the show, sitting on that reunion couch in season 15, being like, "This show used to be elevated, not this trash that it is now." It's ironic that Vicky was arguably the first housewife to kind of slowly turn the show into the freak show that we know and love it for, where there is the
Absolutely.
Sense of conflict, even though the conflict is with a guy on the phone.
I wonder if that's quite a good segue, this sense of Vicky the hypocrite. And also, you just said there about her crossing herself, mm-hmm. particularly in terms of religion. You know, Vicky's similarity to someone like Ramona, who capitalizes on and uses religion when it benefits her. And this whole slight kind of Catholic schoolgirl thing, like, that's inappropriate. I'm just a cat. Oh, like how much she loathes Bronwyn and everything Bronwyn stands for, because it's a bit like, this used to be a good, wholesome show for church-going people.
It's glorious. Whatever. I love it.
And it's like, you ruined our community.
Yeah.
The audacity for Vicky, who whenever it suits her is flashing and endlessly talking about her sex life and how satisfied she is with other people, and loves to get drunk on camera, to be known as the funnest member of the group, the wildest member of the group, or whatever. It's very galling, her fallback on this, like I say, very Ramona Singer-esque church lady slash slightly coquettish.
Yes.
Schoolgirl thing.
When she remembers to, completely. The similarities with Ramona are so striking.
So many.
It makes sense that they're two of my favorite housewives, I guess. And I think the key, as you just demonstrated, to what makes them glorious characters is that they are insufferable with the double standard and the judgment and the sanctimoniousness and the hypocrisy. But what makes it so satisfying is that they will always reliably be clowned, either by fellow castmates calling it out,
or
the editors flashing back to a moment where they're not practicing what
they
preach.
Where they're a hypocrite. Absolutely.
It's amazing. So if we can jump to this season 14 reunion performance, where, just as a side note, I feel like we are sort of allowed this freedom when we're talking about Vicky, because again, much like Ramona, Vicky develops and changes not a jot over the years. There's a lot of consistency in her despicableness, where something she does at the end of her time on the show could easily have happened at the beginning of her time on the show and it wouldn't look out of character. I feel like it's not like Luann, where there's definite like beats to her life where she changes alter egos. Vicky's kind of consistently this monster.
Yes.
So at the season 14 reunion, she's coming in furious because, for some context, she's been demoted that year. This is the first and only year she's been a friend of, and she's going to be fired shortly after the season. She's furious about the fact that she hasn't been at the reunion taping from the very beginning. There's a moment where it looks like she's going to be, you know, siphoned off to the end of the couch as far away from Andy as possible. She throws a big hissy fit.
I love those meta moments so much on the show. They're potentially my favorite thing about Housewives ever. And they almost exclusively happen in reunions, when the politics of the show itself, for example, the seating arrangement, like how close you are sat to Andy.
Yeah.
When they're sort of self-referenced by the show. It's just...
It is. Yeah. It's endlessly fascinating. And just kind of comparing it to Danielle, where she has a similar situation where she refuses to come out unless she's sitting next to Andy, and then Andy doesn't comply, but he does for Vicky.
I think it really makes you realize how much that, as however authentic or however much... Someone said something really fascinating to me about the Kardashians, and about how the Kardashians have lived their life on a reality show for so long that what they've done is effectively make their life a reality show, mm-hmm. and then their life is filmed. But they're not playing up to the cameras, that is how they now exist. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a similarity there with people like Vicky and Danielle, that what I like about those meta moments is it reminds us that they're businesswomen and they're canny and they care about their standing on the show and they care about the success. Potentially no one more than Vicky Gunvalson. Mm-hmm. She's rabid about it, and that doesn't mean she's putting... Teresa's the same. It doesn't mean they're putting on a performance. I genuinely believe that they're like terrible people to be around. Mm-hmm. But they are aware of how much they've given the show and how much... I think that they feel that they hold this capital of... In the same way that Teresa's like, I've had three kids on the show, I've been to prison, I've done it or whatever. And you've got that slight sense from Vicky of, I've lived out my entire life.
Everything.
I've lived through a cancer scam, I've lived out... And, you know, stuff we'll talk about later where there's a sense of earning your stripes.
Yeah.
Of, I feel like the fury comes from, how dare someone who's given less.
Yeah.
And I kind of get it on something like that, where you look at like Gina and Emily and you think, you must look and kind of go, how dare they be given more opportunity when they're dull as mud?
That Danielle-Dina dynamic of, it's not fair that I, despite my best intentions or no, come across like the crazy villain and get paid dust for it. And someone like Dina can just skate on by being the boring, relatable one that everyone likes.
Yeah.
And there's no... Where's the loyalty and the reward? But anyway, the run-up to it is so funny, because Vicky goes into it honestly like she's in Sunset Boulevard or something. It's like, it's not like she's...
How much would you pay to watch Vicky Gunvalson in Sunset Boulevard?
I don't know where I'm from. I know my way around here.
I know my way around here.
She just walks out onto the set and just like one spotlight shines on her. And everyone in her head, everyone's clapping like, Vicky's back. Woo!
I've come home at last.
And then obviously falls over and breaks her ankle or something. But yeah, so then this kind of delusion comes crashing down as she realizes that she is just going to be treated like any other friend of, and she's furious about it. And she's coming in and she's hot on Bronwyn, because in Bronwyn's eyes, she's taken her spot on the show, and Bronwyn is this slutty little bisexual, and that does not meet Vicky's moral compass. And she lays into Bronwyn. She's like, I don't like the kissing, I don't like the nakedness, do it off camera. 15 years ago I started this show, turn it down, Bronwyn, turn it down. And then hilariously she's like, I lost 2 clients last week because of that show, they said it doesn't meet their moral compass. And everyone's like, what? And then Andy immediately is like, we've seen you flash your tits, Vicky. And then in her bubble voice, she's like, I didn't do it on camera. And then it cuts to Vicky flashing her tits on camera in Ireland. Andy then goes, Vicky, we've seen you demonstrate how to give a blowjob on the show. Immediately cuts to Vicky deep throating a dildo. And she's like, I loved every minute of it. And then Jean is like, you've got so wasted, you pissed in beds. And then it cuts to Vicky drunkenly pissing her pants on Tamara's bed after going out to Andalay's. And all Vicky can do after each point is just shake her head in that way she does, where she's like, no. And then she makes one more declarative statement about how moral she is. And Andy's like, he literally goes, you realize you're giving us every opportunity to pause and make montages of your wildest moments, right? And then Vicky, again in her bubble voice, is like, I don't care, do it. And then Andy's just like, okay. And the editors are just like, here we go. And they just take Vicky by the ankles and drag her across the floor. We get Vicky talking about wanting to go swinging. We get a woman talking about kissing Vicky in college. We have Vicky doing a keg stand with a load of college kids. We have Vicky with a stripper. We have Tamara drinking a shot of tequila out of Vicky's cleavage. We have Vicky talking about her vagina. We have Vicky kissing Shannon. We have Vicky farting on a pillow. It's the most glorious montage on television, and one that I will return to endlessly. It's so funny. And of course, none of this is outrageous. It's not meant to shame Vicky for having fun. She is just whooping it up and having a good time. But it wouldn't have been dredged up in the first place if Vicky hadn't tried to retcon history and make out she's this moral touchstone on a show where she's faked cancer. Like, the gall of it is just stunning.
It is amazing. And I think what's also amazingly consistent about Vicky in a similar mirror image to Ramona can be relied upon every single season to say something awful and then be like, I'm sorry, no, I am, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, no, I am, or whatever. Vicky can be relied on every single season to start shit, normally with a new person or whatever, and go on a kind of moral crusade against them and to never apologize.
Yes.
Like, she takes no ownership for like anything that happens on the show ever.
I think it does go back to, and we sort of touched on this with the cancer scam episode, where there are certain truths in life, like death, taxes, Vicky will hate the new girl on Orange County. And it must be hard for Vicky to exist on this show where there is just this parade of nondescript big booby blonde 30-year-olds coming on. We know Vicky is both incredibly insecure about many things, her love life, her looks, but also she has this incredible narcissism complex as well. And I think that's very tricky for her to navigate, and comes out in this constant hazing of the new girl, which so clearly comes from a place of insecurity. And I think it does motivate a lot of her often very misguided actions on the show, such as cancer scam.
Oh, I thought you were going to say her facelift when they didn't give her the time to recover.
Oh my God, she's such a clown. I love that. It's so, again, expectations versus reality. Vicky, season before, Slay did a comedy show comparing her to Miss Piggy. It completely triggered her. Hilariously, she had to do a Watch What Happens Live appearance once where her co-star was Miss Piggy. I'm like, that is so cruel to do that. She immediately has a facelift after season 7, thinking she has like 3 months bed rest to get her face in check before they start filming the new season. I believe Brianna went into early labor, so the cameras picked up filming for season 8 straight away. Vicky's like 2 weeks out of having a facelift, and so she's forced to film the first half of season 8 with the most swollen, beaten up face possible. And everyone's like, is Vicky okay? Has she been stung by a bee? She's such a clown. I love it. Can we talk a bit about her clownishness? Like, Vicky the Klutz.
Yes, well, I was going to say the other thing that can be relied upon every single season without fail is for Vicky to have a near-death experience.
Oh, I love it.
In which she makes the sound similar to the woman who falls out of the grape stomping barrel. And
yes. Like, oh, right. I can't breathe. Deborah.
What was the one we were talking about the other day when her finger gets caught on the zip wire?
Oh, it's so, yeah.
Go ape thing. And it's like, Oh, Sharon! And you've got Tamara being like, Sharon! You got her finger! And Shannon's like, oh.
Yeah, she's like, Shannon and Vicky between them are very good physical comedy. It's such a good pairing because it's all trust building on this ropes course. And of course it's Vicky swaying through the breeze going, whoa, whoa. And then Shannon, who's this nervous wreck, being like, okay, Vicky, you need to hold on to this cable and then step onto that cable, Vicky. And then Vicky gets up and then gets her finger caught in this rope. And it's just so funny of Shannon.
You would honestly like, think she's losing
stuck,
a finger.
I'm stuck. Stuck. And then, Shannon, no, my finger's gone. And it's filmed from this strange angle below. Where again, like Vicky's face just looks so round.
No, the helmet doesn't help, I think.
It doesn't, no. She looks so cartoonish. And of course, Tamara yelling at Shannon, not because she actually wants Shannon to not hurt Vicky anymore. She's yelling at Shannon because Shannon will get turned into more and more of a tizzy.
Yeah.
Shannon's just frozen in fear, going, oh, no, I'm stuck. Ah! It's so good.
But also things like the fall in Jamaica. It's like, you can't believe it's another one where it's like she just slips on her ankle and suddenly it's like, she makes noises that make my blood curdle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you just know there's always going to be that preview of the ambulances arriving.
Amazing.
The neck brace going on. It's like, she landed on her foot, but let's just stick a neck brace on
Vicky
anyway.
Vicky in an iron lung out, or like something. Yeah. Just being wheeled off. I think there's a couple of points here about Vicky, where first of all, I can hand on my heart say unironically that Vicky Gunvalson is the greatest physical comedian of our time. She can do a pratfall like nobody else. And of course, a lot of it is exaggerated. And Brianna herself is like, after the sand dune accident, she's like, really like hyping this up now for attention. But unlike someone like Tamara, I feel like it's not hyped up for the show. I think it's just that is how Vicky goes through life. She has this incredible knack for walking into misfortune and playing it up for sympathy because she's just a bit of a narcissist. And I think she likes the attention in real life and it just happens to be caught on camera. But we could go through like, there's a litany of best bits. We have Vicky falling over at that go ape thing before they even get up in the air, and she blames the instructor for pushing her. She falls over on a surfboard at the beach. She gets helped up and immediately falls back over the surfboard again. We get her getting her hand caught in the door in Ireland, and she's like, oh, my arm's caught. Oh. We have Vicky falls off the world's smallest platform in Gina Keogh's backyard. It's like raised by about half an inch. And annoyingly, the camera doesn't catch it because it's like filming Gina Keogh. And let this be a lesson to every cameraman. If you have a choice, it's not a Sophie's choice. If you have a choice between Gina Keogh and Vicky Gunvalson, the camera should always be on Vicky Gunvalson because she's going to do something funny.
Always.
But then in fairness, Gina provides a good comedic button at the end of the scene where you can just hear her go, ooh, there's a step there. Like off camera. And it's very much a spiritual cousin to, you know, Ramona's.
Very much.
Should've gone this way. Should've gone this way. Similar vein, Vicky falls over when they're bowling and that's caught off camera. But then you hear Heather go, medic, Terry, medic. And then it culminates in my personal favorite moment of Vicky falling ill / dying is the season 12.
Oh my God.
Trip to Iceland. So fucking funny. And I think what makes it unique is that for three quarters of it, and like most of the other times, it's played for drama. There's no like music. So they've landed, they're in Iceland, they're basically in the Arctic Circle, so it's constantly daylight.
Can I just say that that trip generally just looks so awful. It's like, you know that thing when everyone's having to be like, wow, constantly on the trips.
Yeah.
But, and I'm sure there's a lot of like amazing, beautiful places in Iceland, but everything is just like black rock and it's just daytime the whole time. And they all seem miserable.
It's kind of miserable. Like they all hate each other as well.
They all hate each other on that season.
You're
and you just can feel that they're like, why aren't we in like Barbados?
They're in this weird hotel that kind of looks like something from Twin Peaks, but then they're all themed like these weird like sex rooms in a Las Vegas hotel. It's like Roman Colosseum theme and then like igloo theme. It's so bizarre. So yeah, Vicky's basically been on a bender for the last 3 days and she's been whooping it up any chance she can get. And so she hasn't slept. She's all over the place. It's probably like high altitude and she's not feeling very well. And what do you do when you don't feel well? You call the police. Before anything else, it's not even calling like the local GP, not even calling an ambulance if you must. It's like the police turn up first. And we follow the police into Vicky's room and she's like rolling around in her bed and she's all red and sweaty, eyes in the back of her head, looking like she's in The Exorcist.
Isn't she being supervised by Peggy as well?
Yeah, Peggy.
Just makes that adds a real soapy element to the whole thing. It's got very like Spanish soap opera vibes.
It's annoying in the moment, but Peggy is really key to the ultimate payoff,
the
because she really buys into, because then you kind of get the other women walking in and you get Tamara being like, okay, Vicky, like, what is it?
If it was the
now?
Other women, it would have been played as clowning from the start.
Right, because they're attuned to
her. Peggy allows it to be played for drama.
Yeah. So then eventually, like, a SWAT team of paramedics descend upon Vicky's room and they're like strapping her into all sorts of heart machines and stuff. A doctor eventually walks in and he says something in Icelandic and Vicky looks so confused and like twitchy that I think in that moment she thinks she's had a stroke or something and she can no longer comprehend. Like, she thinks he's speaking English, but she's like, I can't understand anything anymore. Oh, this is it. I'm going. And then he eventually switches to English. And yeah, you say it's like this dramatic music. Peggy's faffing around. It's very serious. There's this weird moment of unity where the women are all arguing, but then they all get kicked out and they join hands and Lydia leads them in a prayer circle, which again, you think at the time, like Kelly or someone would be like, what? No, this is stupid. It's stupid, but like they all really commit to it and it's played very seriously. Like, it reaches this dramatic climax and they're like, oh my god, Vicky might actually have to go to the hospital. The doors open and then suddenly the music cuts and there's just like the single sound of one squeaky wheel as they just roll Vicky out in a wheelchair, except she's fully covered her body and face with a white dressing gown. And they like have to like pick her up and lower her down the stairs and the bop, 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 music's playing. And everyone's being like, what? What? Vicky? You okay? What's she doing? What? And then Tamara's like,
she
thinks she's Michael Jackson. And then we get this like classic Shannon yelling confessional, like, cover your face with a robe because we're in Iceland. The paps are going to see you. What? But what doesn't make sense is that she covers her face wholly and exclusively on the journey from her bedroom door to the lobby. And then she like whips it off and like jumps into the back of this ambulance. And it's like, we've seen you in your bedroom. We are seeing you now. I don't know who's benefiting.
Reality show, exactly.
So bizarre.
Oh, God.
Really, really makes me laugh. And it feels appropriate as well. It's another very Vicky thing that she really takes her mortality very seriously. I feel like in general, it's a very mum thing to do. I don't know about you. My mum's always talking about, she's gone to like this weird phase in her life where she's like, because you know, I'm not going to be here anymore. And one day you're going to have to start thinking about it. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to hear
that.
This.
I think last year we were in the car and my mum was suddenly saying something about being really proud of me. And she was like, from whatever cloud I'm looking down on.
Oh, God.
Like, Jesus Christ.
It's like any cardinal or something in the back garden. They're always like, that's grandma. She's looking over us. There she is.
Snooping.
So, yeah. So yeah, it's just very Vicky to really go on and on about her mortality. And this has been played, I think, both for laughs and it's also been played for tears as well.
It is a funny also contradiction in Vicky, isn't it? That it's a bit like her whole kind of like sexy girly thing being contradicted with her infantilizing of herself constantly and her whole sort of, I gotta go party.
Oh, I hate that. Oh,
honestly, it pained me. I was kind of hoping you were going to say it because it pained me to even do the impression.
I gotta go party, Tamara. Oh.
That whole thing being contrasted with her sexy kind of baby girly voice thing that she does with men feels similar to the kind of clownishness being the flip side of this coin of her kind of lofty sense of mortality constantly. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like Ronnie in Vancouver's obsession with... with Romulus and like Roman myth.
Right.
But this sense of this very heightened thing, but in quite it's interesting that she's such a narcissist, but then she has this kind of awareness of
how small she is and death in the grand
and
scheme
how small
of things.
She is, exactly. And that feels
yes, that's such
unexpected.
A good point.
I'm full of them.
She is such a sad clown. She's like a clown from an Italian opera. Vicky is multiples and dimensions in ways that are beyond human understanding. And
I would love to see Vicky made up as a clown with everyone being like, poor little Pierrot.
She did.
Where is your Pierrot?
Basically, if you could take her monologue that she does in Ultimate Girls Trip about like, you tell them she died sad, you know, because she's just broken up with Steve. Do you not remember that?
No.
She's like, I want to die with joy in my heart and I don't have joy anymore. My love tank is empty. And you tell them if she were to die now, she died sad. And it's like Phaedra and Tamara and Brandy on the bed. And then again, immediately they're all like, oh, shut the fuck up. You're an idiot. And like laughing at her. And then like the goofy Alex McCord music comes in again. But you could take that and turn it into an aria. And I think it would be beautiful. So we have it played for comedy in something like the Costa Rica trip in season 7 that we kind of touched on with the Alexis Bellino episode, where it's like the morning after Alexis has gone home early because she feels like she's been bullied off the show. They all have this like day of whitewater rafting, some great Vicky physical comedy moments there.
They go whitewater rafting so much on OC. I swear every other trip it's a whitewater rafting.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. If you need a little hit of comedy of good TV, stick Vicky in a dinghy, send her down to some rocky whitewater rafting, some rapids, and stick the camera as close to Vicky's face as possible from the least flattering angle.
In a helmet.
It's always going to be TV gold. So they do that. They've really bonded over that. And then they go into the rainforest and they have this beautiful ceremony where they each have a little sapling and they're going to plant them one by one, and each sapling represents a different woman, and eventually they're going to grow and become these humongous trees that currently surround them now, and there's a lot imbued into it, and it's a lovely spiritual moment. And when it's Vicky's turn, she walks up to the sapling and then just turns to the ladies, and with this blank vacant expression in her little baby voice, she says, apropos of nothing, you know what's going to be sad? It's one day when one of us dies. And then she like immediately starts tearing up, and the camera just cuts to the blank faces of the other women as they're having to like grapple with Vicky's existential crisis, and they're trying to like walk her back off of that ledge. And then she eventually collects herself, and then she goes to plant the sapling, and then she breaks it in half, and then she immediately starts crying and laughing. And then they say that that was Alexis's tree, which then like sets her off even more. That's like the best comedic moment of Vicky dicing with death on the show. And then in classic Vicky manner, we have probably the worst that you could get of dicing with death on the show.
I think the worst that anyone has, and I think such a one-of-a-kind moment on the shows, apart from maybe Taylor's experience in the first couple of seasons Beverly Hills. But however, what's shocking, I think, is that Taylor's experience felt like it was captured because the show wasn't 100% sure where their moral compass or obligation was at. Mm-hmm. And I think what's interesting with what happens with Vicky is that we're pretty late into Housewives, and I don't know if it was any other housewife if they would keep filming. I certainly don't think that they would be allowed to air the footage. But I think that in a similar way to someone like Teresa, like we said, Vicky's all-inness with the show means that we have this footage of Vicky discovering that her mum has passed away at a Bronco party. Do I mean Bronco?
Bunko.
Bunko.
Bronco is... I'd love to see Vicky at a Bronco party as well, though. Jeez.
Yeah. At a Bunko party. And it really is one of the most upsetting bits of footage in the Housewives canon. I remember the first time I saw it, I found it so shocking, and I wasn't really sure how I felt about it, and I found it really upsetting because it is just such raw, unfiltered grief. Mm-hmm. And I still don't know 100% how I feel about it, but I definitely think there's something extraordinary, and we say this all the time, about how these shows give an opportunity for all of their performativeness, and for, you know, when someone sits down next to you and watches for a bit and they're like, oh, but it's all for the cameras or whatever. Yeah. And it really bugs me because I'm always like, it's that thing we always come back to of it's a reality show. And they ultimately, they all know it's for the purpose of a show. We know it's for the purpose of entertainment. We know, God knows how heavy handed Tamara's got in the most recent season. The desperation to force storylines. That doesn't take away, though, from those moments where the cameras happen to capture actual life things happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I'm not sure where else one has the opportunity to see human reaction and emotion in that unfiltered way. Mm-hmm. Because what they capture is something that no one would ever choose to have a record of.
Yeah. They do a really good job of keeping it unfiltered as well. Maybe I'm misremembering, but it doesn't feel sensationalized in the moment. That doesn't feel like a lot of post-production thrills. It's just kind of like one single shot following Vicky, listening to a voice that you can't hear on the other end of a landline.
Well, they must have been so uncomfortable. I mean, they
completely
must have just been,
yeah, like everyone's off piece, like, yeah.
Exactly. And you really can see in the response of all the other women as well, it really shocks everyone to their core. And it, you know, we talk about these two sides of the coin with Vicky. Similarly to her unabashed loudness and silliness and clownishness, in her grief, she is totally and unashamedly loud and doesn't hold back in any way. And I wonder if it had been any of the other women, we think of Shannon or we think of Heather or something like that, I think there would have been a degree of control.
Yeah.
Because of this awareness of not just the show, but the fact that they were around a lot of other people. And I don't know many people who have Vicky's ability to be such an unfiltered version of themselves. I've said unfiltered like 11 times in the last 5 minutes, but it's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's no, she doesn't hit any wall with it of like, okay, she's straight to the floor. I mean, she's screaming like a child. She's asking where her mother is like a child. She goes,
why won't she wake up?
It's awful.
It's such a rarity. I think we've said this before, but one of the reasons I love Housewives is that, I know that this kind of sounds pretentious, but hey, I'm not going to change my tune now. But as an actor, I find it so fascinating, those pieces that pierce through what otherwise you would find on scripted television, and you see a genuinely unique human reaction to something that affects all of us that is very useful as an actor. Like, I've never seen anybody genuinely in real life find out that their parent has died in real time on television before. And the awkwardness that comes with it, it really reminds me of, again, going to get more pretentious, but the scene in Macbeth where Macduff finds out that his wife and children have died. And what Shakespeare does really well is that he picks up on the kind of the awkwardness of that, where he's in shock and he just has this repetition of, oh, so my wife's dead. Right, okay. And my kids are dead as well. You say, okay, right. And is my wife dead? Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, you said that. Yeah. Which feels so real. And the same, like the repetition of Vicky, of why won't she wake up? It gives me chills every time. And I think I said in the very first episode we ever did, kind of with my tongue in cheek, that I love The Housewives because it, there's like my copy of the complete works of Shakespeare. There's this quote by Judi Dench on the back. And she's like, this is the essential handbook for anyone who's felt love, happiness, jealousy, fear, confusion, blah, blah, blah. And that's kind of what I said about Housewives. It's also Vicky as well. Like, Vicky has shown us the full breadth of human experience in a way that is very much unfiltered, that is often, more often than not, flawed, and doesn't necessarily reflect well on her in terms of looking like a good person. But I've been thinking a lot, especially with new Real Housewives of New York and people, you know, being like, this is what New York should all be about, like fun, relatable women. And relatability, I think, when it's applied to housewives, is such a narrow, convenient term, where what they mean by that is they want how like Denise Richards acted when she was on Beverly Hills, like turning up with like a messy bun and jeans and being like, I thought this was a barbecue. Like, why is everyone in their ball gowns? Only in Beverly Hills. I can't keep up with these girls. It's like a very sanitized form of relatability where you're like, I wear jeans as well at home. Like, I'm just like Denise.
Yeah.
What actually I find a much more interesting form of relatability is the kind that Vicky has, where I don't know about you or anyone listening at home, but I can certainly relate to Vicky's moments of righteousness and being judgmental and being jealous and being delusional sometimes and being insecure and wanting to be loved. Like, it's that almost Alex McCord effect, where I think the reason why people are often so repelled by Vicky is because we do, whether we like it or not, see the dark sides of us within her. And she, as a result, becomes such a compelling anti-hero in a way that I think very few people have been fully fleshed out on any kind of TV, even sort of prestige television. I honestly, in a weird way, think she's right up there with like Don Draper. And I think it's incredibly rare to see an honest, believable portrayal of genuinely morally gray characters on television, especially for women of a certain age. And Vicky is just that. And if I can just like get on my soapbox for a second, I feel like a lot of TV writers, most of whom are still straight men, feel a need to present this very rote take on an anti-hero where they're almost always this like fedora wearing man that I find a bit boring. And if, heaven forbid, there ever is a female villain or an anti-hero, there's this pressure to kind of give them some traumatic backstory. It's like Cruella DeVille, or you know, it's like, oh, she whatever happened. Whereas Vicky, she's kind of given this freedom to just exist as this very morally complicated flawed character, but yet we still are capable of feeling empathy for her. Weirdly, even in the cancer scam, I can judge her for her actions, but I can still get inside Vicky's head, knowing her as a character for the last 15 years and being like, her desire to have companionship will lead her to do crazy things, because the thought of being
like
without
so many of us.
Yeah, I think that's a very human experience.
And it is so human. That's so true. So I just felt like the Flash just then. James was talking and I went and got an Amazon parcel and ran back.
Great.
And honestly, it felt like the music
was
like
seamless. I was holding the fort there.
But I still had you in my ears.
Oh, you did?
Amazing.
Okay, good.
Also, just going back to Shakespeare, if I ever told you about when a guy I dated pointed in his room to a book and was like, got a book of Shakespeare's plays? And I was like,
cool.
Get complete works of Shakespeare. He was like, yep. I just thought that was the funniest description. Book of Shakespeare's plays. I think that's all so true. And I think that is why she's been so important on the show. And I guess I'd want to end by talking about the fact that she's returned to the show. And I was quite excited about that and quite disappointed in the way that the show sort of handled her return by sticking her straight in a scene with Tamra and Shannon, in which Tamra's trying to shoehorn in a drama that Vicky's actually not a part of, which makes her this slightly like weird. It's really keeping her in that relegated like friend of status even more than ever.
Yeah.
By having her sort of sitting there being like, what, she's the liar? She's a big liar face. But yes. Like not get to actually be a part of it. And she's just there being like, woohoo, let's, you know, tequila. And then like turning up at a party where she's not even given a doppelganger person to be. She's just got a keg. And it just all feels a bit sad.
I do think the shows have been going on for long enough now where we've had enough OG housewives go away and then come back in a friend of role, lest we forget someone like Danielle. And it's never going to be the same. And it does feel slightly
different. Danielle's return was pretty good.
But like the joy of Danielle is following her in the first person. Like, don't get me wrong, she's great in group scenes, but like we need her at home.
No, you're right.
Twirling her finger around her hair being like, I don't know, I think that they're trying to kill me, you know. And it's just so sad to have that part of her deprived from us. And it just feels like, I don't know if you producers know what makes these characters so compelling.
Yeah, but I do wonder whether that's partly, it's partly on the producers, but it's partly if Vicky's not in a relationship right now or something, it's quite hard to follow. We almost need her to be blinded by some other awful guy or whatever.
Yes,
to
give
get
it time.
She will find
one. I have faith that she will.
Godspeed. Honestly, I'm slightly worried. It's like Shannon in this current whole situation of everyone saying that John is a bad guy. And I'm just like, where are they finding all of these terrible men?
I know.
And why can't any of them just like find a nice, like even John I thought seemed okay. And I know that that's obviously, I'm only getting, you said something really intelligent to me last time we recorded about the men now, obviously they used to feel like they were captured more organically by just the show following families around, but now that they're sort of part of the call sheets and things like that, it feels like they're able to give a much more monitored show of their relationship,
right?
Which is how you get someone like Shannon being like, I don't want any of the bad stuff put out
there, right?
Where obviously that's complicated, but it is also, God, it would be so depressing if she had gone from like one bad guy to another, a bit like the whole Vicky Steve thing.
I know. It's hard to judge, isn't it? Because if the people saying it are, first of all, the likes of like Emily and Gina, where it's like, I'm not taking their relationship advice by any means. And also Tamra, who I think is probably, if she just knows if she says it enough
Tamra
to Shannon,
is
she
doing
will
the worst job this season. Honestly, they've got her back and she is doing such a bad job. The bit with, what's her name, where she was like, you better watch it, Tamra. And she was like, just tell me to fucking watch it and then just throw a napkin in her face. And it was just like, you've got bad at this. Like, you've got...
I think she's a little rusty. I think...
She is rusty.
There was a big misfire with Shannon at the beginning. And I think that was legitimately quite embarrassing to see a former Titan like Tamra kind of just completely misfire with that. Just try and start some drama and then have like a fake makeup session session, do her fake crying, and even Shannon didn't really fall for it and was just like, oh, okay, Tamara. But I think she's greasing the wheels a bit and she's getting back into things. I think she has a good long game going ahead with Heather right now, where she's sowing the seeds with Shannon, and Heather can see it coming.
I'm actually,
as well.
I'm really enjoying Heather at the moment.
She's putting in a great performance.
I loved her argument with Taylor. Taylor's a very strange addition. It doesn't feel like
she's kind of crap. She kind of can't hold her own.
She's crap. And also I'm like, oh, but I just don't think Taylor belongs on reality TV. And because I don't think she wants to argue with anyone. I think she seems quite nice, but also like she's trying to do the show and it just doesn't, it's not a good fit. But I really enjoyed Heather's, the IMDb fight. The way Heather went into such Heather mode of, she argues so slowly but articulately and not leaving any room where it's like,
not only is it, yeah,
not only is it this, but I actually don't appreciate, and you know what's more? And it just goes, where I'm just like, ah, to be able to argue like Heather.
It's not only anti-women, it's just not nice.
It's just not nice. So good. But you're right, she can see it coming. And it's funny because Heather's the smartest of all the women and it's tricky. I really admired that thing. You know, the lunch where everyone was like, and also Heather, you did this. And she just copped and she was just like, well, I'm really sorry with all of them. Because you can tell she can see that she's the target for the season.
Yeah.
And she's trying to do the really clever thing, which is to just constantly diffuse. And the same when Shannon was like, I heard that Terry's having, and she was just like,
nah. No.
Like, he's not.
Yeah.
That's it. And I just think...
it's a strange one because I do think that Heather is very villainous. And I hate when the show positions her, especially last season, as sort of this aspirational hero who was kind of the reason why they got rid of Noella, who I thought was fantastic television. But now she kind of is getting a villain edit. And I think it's really unwarranted and unjustified. And yeah, it's just fascinating. Heather can see it. She's smart. She knows Tamara's book of tricks. She can see this coming from a mile away. But there's nothing she can quite do tactically. She doesn't really have any allies right now.
They should have kept Noella and had Tamara come back and had those two go head to head. That would have been
great. Imagine Vicky and Noella. Like, I mean, Vicky would go into a sputtering meltdown. Bring Bronwyn back. God damn it. God, if I was running the show.
Bring back Bronwyn! We know you lactated and had strippers, which is weird.
Love her. Anyway.
What should we talk about next week?
Do you want to talk about Carol Radziwill?
Okay, so James has suggested this thing to me, which I think is going to be slightly painful because I feel I might have to mourn an idea that I had of Carol that something tells me you're going to...
Oh, really?
Say I was wrong. No?
I feel like we, over the years, have had a lot of conversations about Carol, and I think we've made our positions pretty clear, and I think...
Oh, and you think you've changed your mind?
I think I've changed my mind, yeah. So maybe we'll find a lot of common ground. So yeah, I think next week we'll talk about Carol in general, her time on the show. There are definitely, in my opinion, different iterations of Carol that are worth investigating. Of course, and ending climactically with this big blow-up that she has with Bethany. I think there's a lot to unpack there. And I'd like to hear your thoughts.
I can't wait.
Amazing. See you then.
Oh, James, I can't believe it. It hasn't recorded.
Stop. No, don't. That's not funny.
That's not funny! What? It's not funny. It's not funny. It was funny.
Oh, come on, it was funny. It's not funny.
It's not funny.
It was funny.
Thank you for joining us on the Housewives Archives. If you enjoyed the show, then leave us a review or give us an old star rating, or you could simply tell a friend. That's great too. Expand the community.
Not a star rating, a 5-star rating if possible.
Exclusively a 5-star rating. If you give us a 1-star rating, we will hunt you down and we will kill you. And we will force you to listen to more stories about spider bites. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to talking to more next week. Bye.
Bye.
Woohoo!
Woohoo!